Okay, people, twice in one day. It's a new record for me. And of course, I'm talking about live streams. How is everybody doing? We were live with Gad Saad at 1:30 this afternoon. I am still in isolation. And just so it doesn't sound as preposterous as it is, for those of you who don't know, I have a kid. I have three kids. And one of them had a teacher in their class test positive for the Rona. And the recommendation was that the class isolate. Just the class, not other kids or family members. And I said, no one in my family is going to be isolating in isolation. And so we all came up to my parents' cottage, which is a blessing that we can get some fresh air so we can isolate together, because hell or high water, I'm not having one kid staring out the window while everyone else around them is leading a normal life. So that is why I have an atypical backdrop. You can see some trees there. They're beautiful. And I don't have my studio gear, my bulldog lights and my good mic. So I've got this and I'm tethering off my phone. So it's been working very well. And it's been working well enough that we did a stream Sunday, did a stream today with Gad Saad, and now we're doing a stream with Nerdrotic, which if you had asked me 3 months ago, maybe it was 4 months ago, who Nerdrotic was, I wouldn't know because it's not my wheelhouse at all. And I'm going to say things, I think, to Gary that might shock him to his core, because I've spent the last few days boning up on who Gary is as an individual. So I've never been into comics. I've never been into Marvel. I've never been into action movies. And he's not here yet, but I'm going to say it again. I didn't like Star Wars, even the originals. So it was never my thing. But it came up during a stream with Robert. And I started looking into it, and it's fun. It's interesting stuff, because above and beyond the Captain Marvel stuff, and above and beyond the entertainment side of it, there's serious social commentary in there that we're all feeling in every domain. So let me see here. Did some people say that the audio is not good? Okay, good. So now I see. I haven't been reading the chat, and I think I've upset some people. We'll get into it. So Robert said, let's do a stream with Nerdrotic, and we're going to talk about these things, because the more I've been watching of Nerdrotic stuff, the more I realize, you know, what has been the politics and the ideologies that have been infiltrating, from Gary's observation, entertainment for the last little while have been infiltrating law, and it's been infiltrating justice, and it's been infiltrating, you know, the prosecutorial systems. Politics ruins everything, and it looks like we have that in common. So without further ado, Gary's been in there, and I see Robert's here as well. So we have a full house, and it's going to be a good one. Okay, who do we bring in first? So much power comes with this. You know what? I'll bring in both at the same time, and we're going to go like this. Hold on. Let's put Gary on the bottom here. Look at this. Okay, can I hear everybody?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Okay, this is magnificent. Oh, I didn't give the standard intro disclaimer, but we've been pretty good on the sidebar Wednesday shows. If we don't get to the super chats, our apologies. I don't want it to interfere with some of the discussion. Robert and I on Sundays are able to deal with it, but I don't want to distract Gary, because this is not going to be a cross examination, but it's going to be close. So let's get started. I mean, let's just get started here, Gary. Your last name is Buechler.
It's Buechler. It doesn't look like it. Yeah, it's ridiculous. We can't even decide within our family how to pronounce it, so don't feel bad.
Germanic or like Scottish descent?
Of Scottish descent, but the name is Germanic. Germanic. Okay. My family were Germans who went to Russia late 1800s, early 1900s for farming, to show because I guess there was a group of Germans that were asked to come over to help with farming because they didn't really know what was going on. And then the Bolsheviks came in and chased everybody out or killed them. And then they went to America, South Dakota.
You're born and raised in South Dakota.
No, that's where my dad was born and raised, here in San Diego.
Ah, okay. How did you get to San? So you, but at some point you moved up to San Francisco.
Yes. Moved to San Francisco in 2003. Stayed there for 18 years and just fled, escaped, a few months ago, and very happy to be out of there.
Well, I'm pulling up one comment, which I now know what it means because I was watching a few interviews of you earlier today. Before we even get into all of that, starting from the beginning, I like to do this with everybody. You know, born and raised, how many siblings? You know, tell us your childhood and how you got to be where you are today.
Oh gosh, how do I keep the Cliff Notes version of this? Born and raised in San Diego, my dad was in the Navy. That's what brought him over here. He's passed away. I have an older sister and a younger sister because I'm adopted. So I met that younger sister only 15 years ago. So I've got two living moms, no dads, no grandparents. I'm married. I have two kids. My oldest is in his early 20s and my youngest is in his early teens. And I used to own, it's so much.
Slow down there. You're 37.
No, I am 51 years old.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
One.
Wow. So you got some sort of Scottish age gene or something. So you stay like at 35.
It might have been all the virgin blood I bathed in, but no. It's just the camera. Trust me. No. So yeah, I've lived a crazy life. I lived a very crazy life. It's been ups and downs. And it wasn't because of my parents or anything. I was I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict. So I've had addiction problems from birth. I was an addict from birth. And I had a very troubled adolescence. I was homeless, got in a lot of trouble. Got serious consequences for that trouble, but that got me to straighten out my life. Then when I straightened out my life, I had no education. It's so weird being after GadSad, right? And then like I was listening to how many, what professor this and that. Well, I've been kicked out of three high schools. That's a true story. And been homeless, like I said, but then straightened out my life, just worked, blue collar jobs and I was happy to do it. Learned to trade. I was selling auto parts for years for Honda, Acura, Toyota, eventually Tesla was my last auto parts gig. And in between there, I owned a comic shop for 10 years in San Francisco. That's kind of a meme now. And that's, but I've been a lifelong nerd, right? So from day one, I learned how to read on comic books. My earliest memories of television were George Reeves' Superman, 1966 Batman with Adam West and Star Trek. And those were my role models. My dad was always at work, right? He's a good dad, but he was just always at work. He wasn't around very much. And I was plopped in front of a TV most of the time. And that stuff just spoke to me. And, it wasn't just a normal interest. It's when I opened up the comic book I remember opening up a comic book for the first time and just like, you could hear music. It was just the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. And that love affair lasts to this very day. And again, I was fortunate enough to work professionally in it for 10 years, sold the shop under bad circumstances. And then I had to go back and work in that old job after being a boss, which was another learning experience, kind of like crawling back up. Which led me to this accidental thing of I wanted to start a podcast when I sold my comic shop because I wanted to still be connected to nerddom in some way or another. My favorite thing about the comic shop was sitting there and talking to customers all day. I got to talk to people of all walks of life every day for 10 years. It's the best job ever. And you get to meet so many cool people and you learn a lot. Through that, I learned a lot about business ownership. I didn't know anything when I bought that comic shop. I decided to do it on a whim, basically. And the week before I bought my comic shop, I had no intention of. It hadn't even entered my mind. Then a lot of events happened, and I bought it within a week and just did it. And won Best of the Bay in 2009 in San Francisco. Got to do some amazing things, but that really. You're working professionally in nerddom. I still didn't hate it after that. And I thought I would. So I started the podcast after I shut down the store and just kind of grinded at it. And I did it as a hobby. I never expected anybody to ever listen. I was fine with a couple of my friends listening once in a while, probably just, out of obligation. and just kept doing it. But then as I was reviewing TV and stuff, I started noticing things. And it's part of the reason I came to YouTube. I used to go to all these fan sites, right, to get my comic book information. And I started noticing they were getting more and more political. And I couldn't stand it anymore. I'm like, I need to go somewhere to still interact with my community, but I can't stand the places I have been going for years, which have never been a problem. And then I found YouTube, and I found Diversity in Comics and World Class Bullshitter. Sorry, but that's the name of their channel. And through that, I found Geeks and Gamers, and I met Doomcock and Midnight's Edge and As from Heel versus Babyface. And we've all just kind of come together, and it's been through, you know, it's organic. I can't even explain. Nobody planned anything, but you were talking about social commentary, and it's because our culture has been invaded by partisan, political, fundamentalists, whatever you want to call it, but it has ruined absolutely everything we love. And this is things, it might seem silly to some people, but it's not. That's the, you know, Star Trek isn't silly to a lot of people. Star Wars isn't silly to a lot of people. People will tell, I get stories every day of, you know, hey, my dad died and Star Trek helped me get through it. I lost my job. Doctor Who helped me get through it. You know, so there is it. This does provide a service to a culture, to a country, to a civilization. And when that gets taken away, there's a void. So I think what's happened is, you know, people like me have started talking about it. And because so many people have been shut down everywhere, voices completely silenced, we're kind of the last bastion of a place to go. And I'm sure you guys experience that too with the mainstream media.
Well, it's an amazing thing, because you talk about the, in one interview, you talked about the infiltration of ideology into Marvel. And like I said at the beginning, when you were watching, I've never been into Star Wars. I was into Terminator, the trilogy. I was never into any of the Captain Marvel stuff, but I was into The Simpsons and I was into Family Guy. I mean, I have all of it on DVD. And there was a time when it thrived off of being in your face, and it thrived off of being edgy. And I've seen how politics, how ideology has ruined The Simpsons and has ruined Family Guy. I mean, South Park is the lone holdout. But what you were describing in terms of happening with Captain Marvel and, you know, all of these superhero things, I just said it's totally analogous. And like, when did it start happening? Has it always been there, or is it just getting objectively worse?
It's getting worse. It's getting objectively worse. I mean, it's been there at a certain level. I mean, like, you know, art is the domain of the liberal minded of the, you know, or the classic liberal, but it's always been about free expression, you be you. It's been a lot more about in the past about individuality. Certainly there's been there, you know, there are aspects of collectivism in there, but for the most part, it used to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's what it used to be. And now I have no idea. Well, I do have an idea of where it's going, and I don't think it's this planned thing. I just think it's what's, you know, my kid was it. We were discussing coming on. My kid just said, "Where did SJWs come from, Dad?" And I'm like, "Well, college, university. It's just been ingrained for so long that it's starting to seep into our culture now." And Hollywood has taken a flyer, and you could see this. You know, they follow, Hollywood follows trends, right? So you could see a couple of years ago, it was identity politics invading. Or more than a couple of years, but it's been slow. But they shift on focus, right? Because they can't focus on the same thing. So it started out with identity politics. Then it was intersectional feminism. And now we're moving right into critical race theory. You could see them, and they get handed paper. I've seen it. People have provided it to me where they are given a paper, you know, that's the best thing I can call it, from think tanks that do work on this to tell you like what stories you can tell and what stories you can't tell. I did a couple of videos and live streams on it about a year ago, and it was freaky to see that. It was basically Western civilization bad. I mean, that's the bottom line. Anything that supports or even looks like Western, like the hero's journey, your classical traditional hero, like Luke Skywalker, and these things have to be deconstructed. And they don't care what happens afterwards. The whole point is they can take over this. They buy a franchise like Star Wars, right? And then, you know, Disney initially bought it to get boys back to the brand, because it was, let's be real, it's a girl's brand. It was a girl's brand. And they said, we need some guys around here, so let's buy Marvel and Star Wars. And then the first thing they do is turn it back into a girl's brand, which, you know, it might be kind of harsh, but it never Star Wars was never a boys and girls thing. Yes, the vast majority of people into Star Wars and Star Trek and Marvel were boys and men. But there was plenty of women around. I remember seeing it with Doctor Who, especially. And they feel like they need to change the story and keep the title, and everybody should just be cool with that. Like, don't worry that we're going to just completely deconstruct the character you loved for decades and then crap on them. And then if you criticize it, well, you're sexist. I mean, it's built in, and that's part of it. That's part of the marketing too. I know I'm throwing a lot at you, but
no, I want to stop you just to bring this one up here. It says George Molho says, no one else stays the course. So true. Gary is the best. None better. Hail Gary. Hail Nerdrotic. Robert, I know you have something you want to say here.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a long component. But I mean, I think it goes to the canon. We have a cultural canon in America that helps shape minds. And like, I grew up on it as a kid. I loved films. I loved it. My dad loved Star Trek. My dad loved all of that. My brother loved Star Wars. For both of them, it was not only a critical escape from whatever they were dealing with and stressors in life at key times in their life, but it was shapers of their ideas. It was shapers of my ideas about, and it was more and more shapers of America's ideas. This is what Andrew Breitbart meant by politics being downstream for from culture, that what's happening at culture will come into our politics, what will come into our society, will come into our kids' minds as what's normal and what's not. And so what's offended me in part politically, what they're doing, I think is very dangerous because I disagree with the ideas and that they're trying to communicate. But what's offensive from an aesthetic perspective is that, first of all, they're bad artists. I mean, these are people that are doing to architecture what the Soviet Union did to architecture. Yeah, nobody goes to the 1970s Soviet Union and say, I want a building that looks like that. But they took, you know, they've taken the Frank Lloyd Wright of our cultural aesthetics, and they've turned it into Soviet 1970s style monstrosities. They're just bad entertainers. They're bad artists. But they are not just willing to put in a new canon. They always have to burn the original canon. Mm-hmm. Two ways I came across, one way I came across the entire culture, and second, the way I came across Nerdrotic in particular. The culture I was, when I was going to bet on the election in 2016, I started studying Gamergate because I was like, okay, what is this? Apparently, because I saw these young, I call it pop right. And what I meant by that was not only populist right, but sort of pop culture right, kind of punkish right. People who 20, 30 years ago would have been, you would have at least thought of on the left, whether it was Mike Cernovich or other people. People who were not your Comic-Con fans were not necessarily country club conservatives. And yet I was seeing him on the Donald and seeing him on YouTube and seeing him in all these other places that this sort of new, you know, great at making memes. These are the meme makers of American politics and culture. And that was part one of them. And when I dug into it, I realized there's this collectivist totalitarian mindset amongst the cultural left. They have to monopolize everything. They have to control comics. They have to control games. They have to control science fiction. They have to control, that's where, you know, Vox Dei partially originates out of. All of these things, this obsessive collectivist cultural control that's like a very Soviet statist mindset. Not like the 1960s left. Not like the 1990s left. It's a whole new brand, a whole new breed that's uniquely dangerous. But the second was watching the utter, now this was mostly aesthetic than political, but it's what happens when you let these sort of yippie professional class kids come in and control a franchise. I discovered Nerdrotic in particular at watching the abomination that became the last season of Game of Thrones. And, you know, what was a great dramatic series just completely self-immolate and implode. And it was a reflection of the other part of what's happening in the Hollywood culture, which is the rise in celebrating incompetence. People who are just not good at what they do. Like, it'd be one thing if you want to create your own feminist version of Star Wars. Okay, I'm not into it, but God bless, fine, no problem. But it was crappy writing. It was bad writing. It was because they don't believe in the original narratives. They only believe in politicized, propagandized writing that doesn't even rise to the level of 1930s Soviet filmmakers. And so that's why I found it fascinating. And I thought the I mean, Nerdrotic's videos are all great. They've kept me away from the bastardization of Doctor Who, praise God. I grew up on it as a little kid. My dad and I used to watch it late night. It was on after midnight. I mean, so I have this deep associational fondness with it. And now they, you know, BBC's just decided to torch it effectively in the name of this political cause. How much were you surprised when you start off on the podcast, you start doing it, at seeing the scope and degree? Did you start seeing it in the comic book store, or was it not until the podcast you start seeing this politicization that's ruining these great art forms?
I'm not a gamer, so it might have been happening there first. I can't say that definitively, but I believe it came in comics first. That's where I started noticing it. And it was all the way back when I had a shop. And it goes back to when I purchased it. The first thing I remember noticing was a Wolverine comic, and a friend of mine drew it, Derek Robertson. And it was written by Greg Rucka. And Wolverine, basically, I'm paraphrasing, was complaining about gun violence. And when Wolverine has like a Conan kill count, he has knives who come out of his hands, and he's like complaining about gun violence. And I'm like, what is that? And that's really when it started, when Marvel shifted after 9/11, and it was good for the most part. But that's when writers shifted how they do business. They stopped doing things the Marvel way, and they started putting an emphasis on writing, and they let these writers start doing things that were completely out of character. So it was shocking at that point, but I mean, it's nothing compared to what we see now. It was just the beginning. But yeah, all the way back in 2003, that's when I saw it for the first time.
It's an amazing thing. What both of you have made me appreciate is, you know, we've read about the book burnings, and you read about how, you know, when a dominating culture has to erase the history of the prior culture. And I never put two and two together. Like, I always said, why do you have to do a remake and change the character? You know, James Bond, for example. I asked myself these questions a decade ago, and I only now today came up with the realization. It's like, to some extent, it's insulting and sort of demeaning to say we're going to just replace a character of a well-established Sherlock Holmes or whatever, James Bond, with something else for political reasons. And I said, on the one hand, it's insulting. But on the other hand, now I'm sort of appreciating that it's the way of erasing, to some extent, the previous civilization that built that in the first place, and sort of usurping it or misappropriating it through rewriting it to some extent. And it's an amazing thing. I'd never appreciated that there was an underlying sort of overwriting of history, not just rewriting to fit the current trends. But
it's like rewriting Genesis. To give people an analogy, you know, you grew up in the Christian tradition or the Jewish tradition. It's like going back and rewriting the very original organic text and just erasing characters, changing characters. I mean, that's why what's happening in Star Wars, you have Mandalorian come along, and I was initially skeptical, but, you know, given Jon Favreau was involved, thought, okay, maybe. And frankly, it really developed. I started living. Gina Carano's character was great. And then, of course, the great season. I won't spoil it for those of you who may not have, for those people who haven't seen it. I have a habit of doing that, so I'll try not to.
Yeah, Robert, you pissed off a lot of people on stream when you spoiled something. I don't even know what you spoiled, but a lot of people were angry.
Actually, it was exactly this, so I won't repeat it. But the end of season, the finale season two, fantastic. It was what a lot of fans wanted. It was actually, to my great shock, Star Wars trying to find a way to build a bridge back to the fan base they had been torching. Not just torching, and what they were done to the Star Wars. They just completely destroyed the character of Luke Skywalker, one of the great all-time canonical characters. For those of our generation who grew up on him, it was the worst treatment ever. And there's the hatred towards the Disney trilogy was well-deserved. And here was an effort to reach back and try to fix at least some of that. I mean, to the degree it could be done. And what do? They have to go and fire Gina Carano. They have to go and try to ruin it at Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy. And it's because that, you know, it's not just good enough to write a new canon. You have to burn the original books. That's their mindset. That's their mentality. And what they're doing to the culture, what they're doing to the aesthetic, the art form, is really, it's Nazi-ish, to use that phrase that deserves to be thrown back on them.
They outed themselves after the whole Gina Carano thing. That ending, which I won't spoil, made a lot of people happy, and it was based on one thing that Disney was trying to deconstruct from the get-go, and it was supposed to be just a one-off thing. They didn't expect the reaction. I mean, it was a real cultural moment. That's what it was. And the powers that be at Disney had to do something. And I don't mean like the tops. I'm talking about, is there factions there? I have no idea. I've never believed that. I think most of them are lockstep. And I think John Favreau's just a hired gun there. And he just tried to do something cool. And maybe he didn't even know what the blowback would be. And I think a lot of that came on Gina Carano, who they were trying to fire from the get-go based on, you know, her horrific tweets of posting memes that say things that generally make sense. We were there. We were watching that whole thing. But they outed themselves as complete hypocrites to a lot of people. And we use the term normies, right? So it's not a derogatory term, by the way. It's the normies are what make the world go round. And it's somebody, it's like, it comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's from people who aren't alcoholics. But I use it like as non-nerds or non-practicing everyday psychotic nerds who put thousands of action figures around them. But they're the people who make the world go round. And those are the minds. We need to capture the hearts and the minds of the normies. And it's, you know, they're not on YouTube every day. They're not paying attention to this stuff every single day, and they're not seeing this progression. And it's bad, but if you just dip in on one thing once in a while, you're not going to notice it. When Gina Carano was fired, that outed a lot of people. And I'm not saying it shifted it changed a bunch of minds, but a lot more than I thought it would. And it ended up being, and to this very day, a total disaster for Disney that they want to go away. And it's not. It's The Last Jedi Part 2, except without the bad movie. It's all of the fallout. It exposed them to be complete hypocrites. And then Bob Chapek, what he said afterwards, there's a way you can strew. I'm going to paraphrase. He was asked if Disney was left or right leaning. He said, "No, I don't see us as that way. We're basically," he said, "basically we're morally good." But you can interpret that by saying, "What are you saying?" Well, because you're obviously left, and I say that as a centrist. And so, what are you saying? The right is immoral? Because like I had a few people take it that way, and I don't know if that's what he meant, but a lot of people took it that way. And when you fire somebody like Gina Carano, who is not just a movie star, she's something that, I mean, it's kind of it's the future of movie stars. Movie stars are dead. You have to have a social media presence, be on a TV show. I think she's this weird amalgamation of like the new star, and she has followers. So when you, and we just recently had something like this happen in this sphere, somebody just super chatted and asked about it. But when you disrespect somebody now, you disrespect all of their followers. So when Disney came out and said, but abhorrent behavior and blah, 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 every single person who follows Gina, most of them felt like that's what Disney was saying about them. Cause they were, by the way. And that caused Disney, cancel Disney Plus to trend for an evening, to where Twitter had to forcibly remove it. I promise you that was trending for 2 days. And Twitter, we saw Twitter in real time taking it out, and then it popped back on, and Disney was doing everything to distract from it, and they couldn't stop us because it was the sheer numbers of people who were pissed when that happened, and still are to this day. And you know, I just did a video on Disney's about to feel these repercussions in real time. They've been able to play their corporate shell game as long as they want. Not saying I understand all that. But when you piss off half your audience, you're going to notice that when the movie theaters open back up. They just did something very strange. Black Widow, their next Marvel movie, is going to be on Disney Plus at the same time it's going in the theaters, which doesn't help theaters at all. So that bailout money that went for this American bailout, the billions that went to the theaters, it's just going to be wasted because they're going to go out of business anyway, because Hollywood's not going to put the movies in the theaters. So what are we're flipping the bill for what to see what, you know, old movies again in the theaters? It's just, it's ridiculous. And Hollywood could save them anytime they want.
Well, it's an amazing thing at a good point on the Gina Carano. And when you insult an individual now who has however many hundreds of thousands or millions of followers, you are, you're not just canceling them, but you're canceling all of their followers. I mean, the question is this though, I don't watch Disney Plus. I know that we have it on our television, but do they not already have enough of a monopoly, if only because of their archives, that they don't care for the time being? They know that the kids are going to be captive to some extent to the garbage they currently offer and the good stuff from the past. And so they just don't care, and they'll weather the storm out and hope to, you know, let people know that they don't care about what you think, and they don't need to either, because they have the monopoly or they have the roots that will make them immovable.
Well, they do. I mean, you know, buying Fox should have never been allowed to happen. That was ridiculous. But yes, they have an absolute monopoly. I'd say, you know, I don't know who the number two is Warner Brothers. And it's not, they're not anything anybody can beat at this point. I mean, it's impossible to cancel everything Disney, because they own Hulu, and there's companies I don't know they own. There's that big, you know, that graph that gets passed around that looks like Mickey Mouse's head that shows all the corporations that they own. It's ridiculous. And they have too much power. They have way too much power. So they can create narratives now. That now they're creating truth instead of creating escapism and entertainment. They are manufacturing truth, or at least trying. And we saw that with Captain Marvel, you know, which was a successful movie. I'm not denying that, but you know, people generally didn't like it. It was 50-50, I would say, and they really manipulated that through the access media. So honestly, at this point, I think a lot of people are at, like, I don't know what the truth is now. And it's because companies like Disney own ABC, and they can feed you the same stuff over and over again. And yeah, it's a huge problem in this country. We don't, we have laws on the books for monopolies that were obviously not, I mean, they're just a waste of time at this point. But the power that Disney has at this point is a little freaky. It's only, but it's, you know, overshadowed by big tech. But you know, but we're obviously, there's us little YouTubers, guys in our room are getting under their skin a little bit. I mean, there's no hard evidence of this. There's just peripheral evidence. But there's employees trying to, you know, deplatform people on YouTube. I don't think that's a Disney edict that's come down, but it's definitely there. It's happening. And you know, we just have to fight it every day. But they're not going to change course anytime soon until they fail. Somebody, like, we have to stop giving them money. They have to have a massive failure a couple times before they even think about changing course. And they haven't had that yet, to be honest with you.
Well, and that's what's fascinating to me is two things. It's like this and the same with the sort of news industry writ large, is that the choice that some people are making deliberately is for power over profits. And then in some categories, the part that's not clear to me is how much that's a cognitive choice by all the economic participants, particularly some major investors and whatnot. And I think for that latter category, they need to gaslight everybody and to script a narrative that their BS wokeism is really popular, that their recreation. The problem is they keep running into economic reality. I mean, you get almost 100 million people watch the finale of Mandalorian because of how viral it went. And then all of a sudden, you're lucky if you can get 3 million to watch WandaVision, you know, after they fired Gina Carano, according to numbers that have been leaked. And we know that some of these numbers, they must have taken a major economic hit because they quit announcing subscriber numbers suddenly out of the blue. After Carano got fired, all of a sudden, well, we'll wait to, you know, we hit a next milestone and then we'll disclose the numbers. And so the and I think the effect that you have, geeks and gamers with Jeremy and the rest, the Doomcock, the other, that constituency, is you bust the balloon of the fakeness of their narrative, and it drives them insane. Because we see the same thing in the news media, we see the same thing in academia, we're seeing the same, you know, what Gad Saad is doing in his field is what you and a bunch of folks are doing in the cultural field. And that's why because a large part of this is convincing people these ideas are really universally popular. They're woke ideas, that it's only this crazy small group of white supremacist, alt-right, Klansmen children who believe anything different than Rey is the greatest ever. I can't do Doomcock's impression that way, but it's good. The greatest ever. But the all of it. I mean, the pretending. I mean, when they started gave nominations to the Game of Thrones final season. Now, I mean, that wasn't done so much for political purposes as it was the insular professional world that rewards their incompetent, incestuous fellow travelers. But it was a sign of a total disconnect. And Hollywood historically hated that disconnect. It used to be you couldn't win Best Oscar for Best Film unless you were also successful at the box office. Now, about 7-8 years ago, they broke that trend and haven't looked back. But like they don't, I think like we're seeing it, how it translates. We're seeing a culture of kids who grew up on shows like West Wing who think because everything they watch and read and review reaffirms them, not only in the news, not only in academia, but in their university experience or grad postgrad experience, but in terms of TV and film, they think, yeah, everybody agrees that, you know, men are maybe women and women are maybe men. And what does that all mean? And that, you know, white chauvinism is, you know, male misogyny is the greatest threat to the world. And da, 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 da. And that's why they're all often shocked when the public elects someone like a Donald Trump, because they're so, you know, they're up to ears with this nonsense. And I think, what's your take? To what degree, if the investors in these industries understood how unpopular this shift is, I mean, you look at Star Wars, it probably left, I mean, it left billions of dollars on the conservative end on the table, destroyed a brand. They built out a whole bunch of amusement park parts of their amusement park to live off of it. And that the full hit of that hasn't been felt because of the timing of the pandemic. But the early signs was it was going to be a complete disaster. They might as well not built that part of the park. No. They can't sell the toys to save their lives. You can get these toys for 25 cents at the discount store if they're not giving them away. You know, buy a real toy and we'll give you some new Star Wars toys for free. How long can they survive the myth that that these are not economically disastrous decisions they're making?
Not long. I think they've actually been given a break because of COVID. So they've been able to take to manipulate whatever government assistance they were getting. I'm sure they took all their PPP money. And I was, you know, talking about that. That makes me and my wife feel great. Because, you know, she lost her business. It can't be much longer. And, you know, the failures, like, yes, they've had failures. But they need what I mentioned earlier. They need like abysmal failures, ones they can't hide because they've been able to hide all this. You're right. You know, their subscriber count for Disney Plus. I mean, really open up. Like, are they telling the truth about that? Of course not. They are padding it. I mean, they're not technically lying, but does that count the Verizon subscribers who got it for free? Yes, it does. Are you doing what CBS All Access was doing, which was counting paused subscribers, which was people who canceled, but their names were still in the books? You know, they push this. So it's not a lie. It's a narrative and this illusion of success. And yeah, people buy it. And the same thing what you said about woke. It's going to take time. I at least a couple more years. I think people have only been really waking up to it in the last year and a half. I mean, I've been talking about it a long time, but what feels like a long time. But there's still hearts and minds that we need to capture because they aren't paying attention to this stuff. And what you said, we're fighting an entire culture of kids who don't. They don't want to argue. If you disagree with them on a single subject, I mean, it crushes them. So, and discourse is gone. And this, again, there's people calling out the truth and I'm painted, in the alt-right and so, or so many others. And we're constantly having to defend ourselves for it, which I'm kind of over at this point. And I was like, just watch my stuff. But, you know, if it gets to the right people, they can cancel us anytime. So I don't know when it ends. Honestly, I thought we were making progress in 2019 at the end of the year. It felt like, you know, The Mandalorian was coming out. We were seeing a shift. Dark Fate had come out and failed, and Charlie's Angels. And there was just this line of failures, but then 2020 happened. And I think everything just got reverted. And so we're almost back to square one.
There was a chat that I brought up that said it's not about the money. And my concern is it is so ideologically driven. It is, in fact, not at all about the money. It's about crushing the ideology, even if it costs you money. And the prime example, Gary, you may not be following this story, but Rebel News, this Canadian news outlets, call them conservative. They're definitely right of center. YouTube demonetized their channel. And, you know, didn't just demonetize for the AdSense, demonetized for Super Chats, so they can't even get Super Chats on streams. Whereas YouTube takes 30% of the Super Chats. So you have these companies who are making ideologically driven business decisions that cost them money. And so it's seemingly like either out of spite or because ideology is worth more than the money, or I'm fully aware that this decision in the long run will make them more money. When people see that the rebel medias have been demonetized on YouTube, they'll be more inclined to go advertise on YouTube. I appreciate that that's a third argument, which I don't believe. So, you know, to some extent, I do wonder if it even matters if they lose money. It's sort of like 1984, where you don't know what's going on. You don't know how much was produced in a year, but they give you a number and it's all that you have left because you have no independent creators. You have no original content being created anymore. You just have the massive powers pushing out the stuff that they say is good and nobody has a choice and nobody can even voice their dissent as to how bad it is because they'll have their reviews scrubbed and they have their paid reviewers to go give it positive reviews.
Yeah, and you don't know where it ends, right? I mean, like, it sounds insane. Like, we're talking about this now, and people are going, yeah, yeah. Imagine, like, hearing this conversation 5 years ago. Like, yeah, a company is out to silence a critic of their movie, and it's because that critic possibly is connected to the alt-right because they don't like Star Wars. I mean, that sounds insane because it is. It's absolutely insane, but we're buying it now because we've been getting our butts kicked. I mean, flat out, we've been getting our asses kicked on this narrative, and we fight every day. But you know, rebel media getting, you know, demonetized, love them or hate them, they deserve their money. And you know, you don't hear other channels getting demonetized on the other side. It's not like it's evenly doled out. If it was, I could make an argument for it's a private business, but I can't because no, it's not even. And they're not even hiding it anymore because this narrative that every single person on the right is now a, you know, I use the term white supremacy, you know, it's people are starting to buy it now. And it's like, it's ingrained in our society. And like, this is literally insane. It's the most insane crap you've ever heard. You know, I just got to keep, we got to keep doing it until we win. I mean, you can't quit, you can't give up, But they hold all the cards. They own the infrastructure. They have all the power. Disney, and I am thankful, you know, YouTube makes ridiculous decisions like that. And then, you know, they back me. I mean, I've never had a problem with them, knock on wood.
Your content is good. It's commentary, but it's not threatening, I would say. But the other, you know, the others who they deem to be ideologically threatening, they certainly get the more scrutiny. Yep. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, it basically depends on the circumstance as to when they accelerate and where they accelerate, because they're playing a careful game of wanting to keep eyeballs coming to YouTube. Mm-hmm. Without sacrifice, because at some point they start to lose even power if they completely are only politically one-sided. I see it as two different groups. There's a group of narrators who want to reshape things for power. And then there's a group at top who just really just care about placating whoever's screaming the most to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that group does care about the money. They've just been deceived into believing that mm-hmm. these are the popular positions and that this will sell well. And they keep running into momentary red flags, momentary glitches in the system and the simulation. Where, hold on a second, this didn't quite translate the way it was supposed to. And so that's where I think there is a gap within the system. There's the people who are really running it who only care about power. But they have to deal with the people that do care about profits and do care about breadth of power, not just a singular narrative. And they're running, and I think it's an area to exploit. And what's fascinating is all the sort of rebels, it's the cultural values of all of the sort of canonical entertainment that we have enjoyed that informs the values that help shape the resistance to this empire of evil. In other words, if you grew up on all the values that, that you're cherished by, you get to play a role as if you're one of those parts. It's not just wearing a costume at Comic-Con. You get to do it in your own little way, in your own little space, make continuous differences that pop the balloon that this is really deeply unpopular, unlikable, not only as a political message, but simply as aesthetic and as art. They're not good artists. They're not good at what they do, period, no. Because they're propagandizers. But probably the most recent insane example is Geeks and Gamers' involvement with Zack Snyder to help raise money for, you know, to help defeat suicide and to help people facing, you know, real mental health issues. That Geeks and Gamers is being blacklisted from being named for being one of the principal supporters to make that fundraising possible solely because the Star Wars apologists, the Disney Star Wars apologists, are gaslighting an insane narrative about Geeks and Gamers, which is, you know, if you watch any of the geek, the idea that they're alt-right is just really the most laughable insanity. I mean, it's like today when somebody said Candace Owens apparently didn't know she was black and said she must have come from the Klan. The, you know, like the Dave Chappelle skit is live and real. What's your take on all of this insanity? How much is Zack Snyder to blame? I mean, I see him as not so much to blame, but at some point you got to have some spine. For people to help raise money for something you care about for charity, you don't throw them under the bus on a bogus, ludicrous narrative. And it's that part of the potential audience that really wanted the 4-hour version of that film. In my view, it's not the wokesters who couldn't wait for the 4-hour version of the film. But what's your take on all of that?
Ooh, yeah. I was invited to be on that stream, but like before Zach came on, I was just going to be on the first half hour. And so I got to watch it all play out. And yeah, we've talked about it quite a bit. There's been a lot of opinions, but it's back to what I said about Gina is when Disney canceled Gina, they disrespected and offended and pissed off everybody who supported her. Right. So when Zach came in there, I don't know what's in his head. I you know, I'm friends with Jeremy and I know like how much work he put into it, and he was willing to back, like initially he was willing, like they didn't want to make Geeks and Gamers distract from the charity part from the beginning. They know the stigma that goes with that name as far as their business is concerned, as well as their channel, not the fandom. So they're willing to take a back seat to that. There was a mistake, and Geeks and Gamers' name was put on the charity stream, which raised over $100,000, by the way. And that $100,000 doesn't get raised without Geeks and Gamers fans being in there. And there's people from a lot of channels too. Star Wars Theory was there, Tyro Magnus, yours truly. There was a lot of channels in there, a lot of fans. And they didn't just piss off 8,000 fans. They pissed off all the subscribers, he did when he came in and said two statements that were strung together, which was, I disassociate myself. I'm paraphrasing, disassociate from Geeks and Gamers. And we got to stop the hate and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just took the air out of the live stream and everything. And my take on it has not changed. I don't know what was in his head. I just know what he said and how people perceived it. And that became reality. Then people could run with the narrative. The Wrap had an article ready the next day. And it wasn't just about Jeremy and Geeks of Gamers. It was about everybody who donated, everybody who subscribed, everybody who shared, everybody who's been part of this movement or fight or whatever it is. He pissed a lot of people off, and he owes them a clarification. If that, like, are those two separate is that statement two separate statements or is it one? I believe he really owes people that, but I don't think it's going to come because, like you said, you know, he's too afraid to lose his job. When it comes to this, yeah, he's a bit of a coward. Yep. And I can separately feel bad for the man for losing his daughter and everything he went through. And I know his fight to get the movie made. I can separate two things. I think he made a horrible mistake, and that mistake can be fixed at any moment. Unfortunately, it caused a lot of division because people felt like they weren't represented right. And listen, people make mistakes. And I mean, if you ask me what I believe, I don't believe he meant those two things together. Doesn't matter. because that's how people took it. And there are some people who believe he put those two things together on purpose. And I can't deny that. I don't know. Again, I don't know. But when he came out and did that, he furthered the narrative. He just furthered the narrative that geeks and gamers and by the way, everybody who subscribes to them and all our hate group, after they donated at the time when he popped in $60,000. Now, when he was there, the donations dried up and then they went back up after he left because there was an auction on eBay as well. So, it took the focus away from that completely. And Warner Brothers, it sounded to me, Warner Brothers wanted to make, forced him to make a statement. Because the mistake, by the way, the mistake again was Geeks and Gamers' name was on the charity page and it was taken off by the time Zach got there. So the mistake was fixed. They didn't need to make an issue of it at all. Nobody did. And Zach didn't need to say anything at all, but he did. He did. It's done. And a lot of people who supported his film, a lot of people donated a lot of money. I donated money. My good friend Az donated money. And yeah, we felt punched in the gut after that because, oh, you don't want to associate. So you're happy to take our money, but you don't want to associate with us. Well, that's Hollywood. Yes, exactly. That's something I know. I don't know what I would have said on the stream. And I can't, that's what a lot of back and forth was for. About and but you know I wasn't there, so I have no idea what I would have done and said because you got a charity stream going on, you're on somebody else's channel, there's a lot of factors going on. Maybe I would have popped off, maybe not. I probably not, because I don't want to be the guy like, look at the alt-right Yahtzee who derailed a 60,000. I mean, they just, all the narratives are ready, and the conversation that's built up in our group is, you know, we have to play by a different set of rules, just like anybody on the right. There's certain things that we cannot say ever or criticize or will be ended, absolutely ended. And there's stuff that other channels can speak freely about and make, accusations about us, and they're fine. They're absolutely fine. And yeah, life's unfair and we got to play things a little different and a little smarter, but it sucked. The whole situation sucked. It was supposed to be a positive thing, and the whole thing was meant to mend fences within the fandom, believe it or not. It ended up doing the opposite, but it wasn't about Zack Snyder. All right. I talked to Jeremy about it before, and it was about, like, you know, getting our message out to fans who don't normally see it, you know, and that's it.
I was gonna say two legal questions to the one that's the super chat, but also the other one. I was surprised when I think it was Jeremy's piece. He went back and talked about the whole history of it, how it really unraveled when Zach was on another live stream, disclosed Geeks and Gamers' involvement prematurely, that the Jeremy knew that was going to trigger what then came in the attack. What was interesting to me is watching that, it appeared the live streamer, I'm not sure if it was a live stream or not, but they appear to have lied to Zach live right there because they're acting, oh, yeah, we turned it off. So don't worry, because he was like, hey, by the way, he didn't use the words off the record, but, you know, this can't be publicly disclosed. And that struck me as an overt lie by that particular channel, by that YouTuber, which is could be, not that Zack Snyder is likely to sue anybody, but that actually could have been, from a legal perspective, a legal violation. And I hadn't seen much comment on that. Did you see that part of it?
No.
Okay, Jeremy's Geeks and Gamers, the one that he does, hey, my last statement kind of thing, in it, he doesn't talk about it, he just shows the underlying video, and I was like, well, did Snyder realize that this was being broadcast? And of course, if it was a live stream, you know, but, you know, some of these guys, like even Snyder, they're totally out of touch with certain worlds. It's sometimes what makes them effective in certain places, but it appeared he was clearly under the impression that this was not going to be publicized. And what I heard, and I'll have to go back and listen to it, but what I heard was the other guy that's recording him say, oh, don't worry, yeah, we turn this off right now. And it sounded like what he was trying to
tell. Oh, yeah, yeah. When he announced Geeks and Gamers, yeah. Oh, I think the guy was, I think that the streamer was, I don't know if he was joking or not. I think I kind of took it as nobody heard that at all. It's a joke. And I thought that was just, that's all I thought it was.
I just tried to be serious, and that Snyder didn't understand the context.
Yeah, I interpreted that differently. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the other stream. But yeah, when he announced the Geeks and Gamers live stream, he wasn't supposed to at all. Like we were going to do it on Friday Night Tights. And then Jeremy said, don't do it. Cause we were waiting on a video and some other information. I said, that's fine. It ended up happening there. I mean, it was just a cluster. I mean, the whole thing was a cluster, but, Zach shouldn't have said anything. Zach had no idea. Didn't have any idea how much trouble this was going to cause. But like that's the narrative. That's the narrative we're fighting every single day.
The amazing thing is, like, Gary, when I'm looking you up, when I put in Nerdrotic, the first two auto population thingies that come up, one of them is Nerdrotic racist. And when the first time someone created a Wikipedia page for me, it had me as alt-right. You have Facebook calling Ben Shapiro the N-word or white nationalist. It is all narrative, but it's all sort of jockeying, posturing, setting up the pieces so that there's enough support. There's enough like documentary support out there that if they ever want to go and move to cancellation, they could say, look, go to Wikipedia page. Look at the search results. Look at the articles written in .com about, everyone who's not far left. It's already been set up so that, the material, the fodder is there if they ever need to go to it. And it's just a question of who gets too much of a powerful voice that they actually become an ideological competitor of the powers that be.
Yeah. I mean, like the biggest takeaway for me from this Zack Snyder thing, everybody's got a different one, but like Geeks and Gamers, Warner Brothers was scared of Geeks and Gamers. I mean, which means they're effective. They're effective. What Jeremy is doing, I mean, none of, his channel's all has been growing. I would do a show with him on Friday and I know how hard he works. And and they're effective because of you guys in the chat, everybody. We're just a conduit. That's all we are. And that scares the crap out of them because they can't run their BS. But that what you were saying earlier, listen, we're fighting this narrative every day. And that's what people were pissed about, because what Zach did was just, like I said before, he furthered it. Like it didn't help anything. And it was just a stupid corporate statement, which if you really think about it, they're tagging on a statement about an incident that happened in Atlanta, and they're tagging it on to sell their movie. They don't care about what happened. They're just trying to like, oh, look at this caring company. Maybe I'll watch Justice League now. I mean, that's all they care about. And they don't like us pointing that stuff out. So they get a little nervous when they don't do any research. If you go watch a Geeks and Gamers video, a live stream, we don't hide anything. We have thousands of hours. You can come and see us anytime. Go see if find out if we're racist or not. I mean, people were calling that live stream, alt-right. And if you took a look at the live stream, that's a hilarious statement. If you took a look at the nine people who were in there.
Well, it's so, like the whole gamer community, like when I got into Gamergate, I was shocked that this institutional narrative with the degree to it. I just when reading it out of the gate, because I hadn't followed it in live time back in 2016, 2015, was that this narrative couldn't be true because I knew gamers. My son was a gamer. I was like, I'm sorry. That's not that world. There aren't a bunch of secret Klansmen. Most of them are rap fans of different kinds of his generation. That this is just ridiculous caricaturing. There's probably something deeper. And of course there was, it's particularly ironic. If you see a typical Comic-Con if you had a Comic-Con version of Nerdrotic and Geeks and Gamers and Doomcock and World Class Bullshitters and the rest, it's going to look like a We Are the World, maybe a little bit like that Star Wars bar kind of dynamic. It's not going to be Klansmen. It's not going to be racist. Not going to be neo-Nazis. The only Nazi-like people is Hollywood in this, because they like to burn things. They like to burn books. They like to burn history. And they like to burn the reputations of people and then destroy them and caricature them. So it's insane at multiple levels. Now, I thought one thing that was intriguing was to reverse the script on the left in terms of whether some of these scripts are salvageable, some of these story narratives, some of the canon is salvageable. And like the idea that started to emanate out once the season finale of The Mandalorian came out was maybe we could just go back and memory hole the Disney Star Wars version and create a different set of sequels. And there were some probably hopeful rumors that would in fact happen, that they would go back and re-script it according to the original narrative. And I know there's still some hope out there, though it's mostly a long shot, though there was a petition that I think was wildly popular to do the same thing to at least the last season, you could argue the last two seasons, of Game of Thrones. Do you think that's a viability? In other words, could some of these brands be salvaged if you had the right people actually come back in and take over who honored and cared about the characters of the canon, the themes of the canon, the stories of the canon, the origins of the canon? Could that actually work? Could the original audiences go back and accept it and embrace it and just memory hole that this sort of deviant attempt at heretical writing temporarily took place? And then secondly, what's the possibility it actually happens?
Yes, it could happen. If you look at it like MySpace versus Facebook, you know, MySpace was much bigger than Facebook, and then MySpace was worth like $10 and not more. But if it gets cheap enough to where another, like it becomes cheap enough where the big corporation dumps it, because it's a multiple part question. If it's say Doctor Who, while it's at BBC, it will never change, ever change. But if it gets so cheap and they just dump it and sell it because they need money, and then another company that's smaller has the desire and doesn't give a crap about identity politics, yes, it's possible, because you need to find people who are willing to undo the first female doctor. If it was Star Wars, it's undo a Star Wars movie. You got to look at it through the lens of identity politics with the first female starring Star Wars movie. The first, you know, major black character that they treated stereotypical and couldn't have been more racist if they tried. The one they shrunk on a picture for China, remember Finn? Yeah. Yeah, I think it is possible, but you would have to erase. You'd have to have somebody who's willing to go, okay, you know, Kurtzman Star Trek gone, Disney Star Wars gone. You'd have to just get rid of all of it. And yes, I think someday, 20 years from now, when these things, and they will be worthless, I promise you. What you said, they're bad artists. If they were good, that's one thing. But you know, they don't have an argument. Soon as I saw the doctor turned into a female, we all knew it wouldn't just be about a woman. They would saddle her with identity politics, and it would be woke. And it was, and it was boring, and it was terrible, because you can't tell a good woke story. You just can't. There's only three stories or four stories you can tell. I always equate it to a taco, except a taco is good, but a taco is not that much different than a burrito or a tostada. That's what woke storytelling is. It's white man bad, one white man distrustful, white man duplicitous. That's about it. That's all you're going to get. So yes, I think it is possible. I don't think it's anytime soon, and it's only going to be until these things are destroyed, absolutely destroyed to their core, which some would argue has already happened.
When you take issue, and I know how the frame of mind of the other side, those who want to demonize are going to, you know, do it. We have a 1 hour stream, a 2 hour stream, and you say something like, Doctor Who became a woman, it became garbage. And the, you know, someone's going to run with the headline that this is misogyny, this is not accepting equality. Where I saw something you said on another interview where it's not a question of that, it's that you don't need to rewrite an existing script, start a new one and make it, you know, make it original, make it good. And this is the thought that I've always had is, why can't you just start something else from scratch with a new story that is an original work, without having to go in with this, you know, reconstructing what was.
And it outs them, because that's what you can do. If you're really about, and like, you know, I've made this for people who've watched my channel, they've heard this before, but there's a character called Romana in Doctor Who. It's a female Time Lord. You can do a whole show around her. She would regenerate, because Doctor Who regenerates into different, she would regenerate into more women that you could show, and she could regenerate. I'm trying to think of it in their, you know, point of view, a black woman and then an Asian woman. You could have a whole show, and then you'd have that show and Doctor Who, and you would make more money. But no, it was really important for them to take something away. And then not only that, I mean, like Doctor Who fans were pretty understanding. They're like, fine, we'll live through the female doctor. And they were actually open to it. Most of them were like, I wasn't. I'll be real with you. I'm like, no, Doctor's a male character. That's it. But there was a lot of people who were like, no, let's give it a chance. So they did. And I tried to keep my mind open. I gave it a shot and it didn't work. It just didn't work. And they couldn't stop there, though. They needed to go and rewrite the entire history of the show. And the first doctor was an actor named William Hartnell, but that's not the case anymore. Now they added another layer of history to the doctor. And now the doctor was originally a little black girl who didn't speak a line. We don't know what her, and they rewrote the whole origin of the story. And their excuse was, we want to make it more accessible. And now we're going to have more stories. And the thing is, the name of the show is Doctor Who. You, after 50 years, you don't know anything about this character. He's got parents and siblings and grandkids. We've never met him. We don't even know the character's name. We've had little, like at over 50 years, they've given you snippets of like his boyhood. And I'm talking like 3-second clips, or he'll tell a story. But yeah, 50 years, you don't know where this guy's from. You don't know what he's about. And that was an instrumental part of the show. But there were some established things that they just completely, once you say something doesn't matter to an established fan base, they go, okay, doesn't matter. See ya. Bye.
Well, and that's, well, there's two things about that. One is I'd recommend people the Edmund Burke discussing the French Revolution, because the need is not just to create something new. The need is to destroy the old, that it must be wrecked, or you know, Mao's Cultural Revolution. You know, the obsession with destroying the old is part of their idea of revolution. It's to obliterate the past. The past itself must be torn down, must be destroyed, must be it's part of their cultural ideology. That's why book burners are always come from this kind of mindset and mentality. It's not just about writing their own book. They got to burn the old ones. I mean, that's why, like, a lot of the Star Wars fans, as an example, might not have been big fans of the Disney sequel series or trilogy, as long as they didn't spend all this time basically just trying to destroy Han Solo, destroy Luke Skywalker, destroy the whole original story. That's what enraged fans. And they pretend, no, that can't be what enrages fans. It must be that they secretly hate everybody that's not a white man. You know, yep. Whatever ludicrous lies they have to feed themselves and feed everyone else to believe, my God, my ideas really aren't popular. That's what they can't look at in the face.
It can't even enter their mind. It can't even enter their mind. And you're absolutely right. When Disney took over Star Wars, they could have gone 100 years in the future and you would have, Luke would have been this legend that you heard about and everybody would have been fine. You could cast, you put all women in the cast. Nobody would have cared. If it was good, it's fine. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about that stuff. You're absolutely right. It's they've gone back and, you know, in each one they've made a prequel for Star Trek. And they've ruined the canon and Spock, and they're about to do Kirk, I'm sure. They went and ruined Luke Skywalker. In Marvel Comics, Captain America is a I say Yahtzee for YouTube reasons, is a Yahtzee, and he still is, by the way. He still is. There's another cap that took his place, but yeah, Captain America, Yahtzee. Somebody thought that was a good idea. Batman is now upset that Catwoman left him at the aisle when he was going to marry Catwoman. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you go down and, you know, Doctor Who was turned into a female. They changed it sounds crazy.
Okay.
They've done it.
I'm just waiting for Wonder Woman to be a man who identifies as a woman.
Yeah.
That'll be the next thing.
Yep.
But you have to appreciate, I know none of these plots. So what you're saying already sounds, it sounds preposterous, but it sounds like a parody that the Babylon Bee would have done three years ago that's come to reality. I want to bring this one up. This one is on point. Nova Zero says, here's something to know about the funk targeting Gary. Auto comp for Nerdrotic is racist and felony on Google. On DuckDuckGo, the auto comp is hat, Gary, and merch. What have we learned? Those are the ones that came up when I searched as well. It is amazing. It's
yeah. Scary. And you know how the first time I found that out, my son's all, hey, when you search Nerdrotic, it says you're racist, Dad. I'm all, thanks. That's great. I'm glad my son got to see that first. And it's from Reddit. And that article or the blog that came out 2 weeks ago, that was the hit piece on all of us. I was in there too. That's why they do it. So they can get, so it can get in the algorithm and they put their keywords. I counted, somebody suggested this in one of my member streams on that Medium blog. They said, you know, search IST, IST. So I did. It was in there 181 times. Now, some of it was words that had IST in it. I would say you could take a good 40 off that. So 140 times it was misogynist and other IST and phobe. Like it was ridiculous. And it was just repeated over and over and over again. So yeah, that's how it gets in the algorithm. And we have to fight that every day. And that's just not to me though. I have to remember that. That's something I have to keep in the back of my mind. We were reminded of this over with the Geeks and Gamers thing. That's everyone who subscribes to me, who's supported, send a super chat, send an email. You know, it paints them as that too. So it's our obligation to call it out as much as humanly possible, right when it happens. That's not always possible, of course. But we have to from here on out. We absolutely have to.
This is the thing. I'm going to pull up this comment here. It says, racist is the new badge of honor. It doesn't hold its original meaning. This is what I've discovered now in my transition morph on the internet. When I first started making silly videos, I was oblivious. When I first started making the law-based videos, I noticed, you know, I made jokes about YouTube picking on me because, you know, for whatever the reason. I still don't consider myself part of any culture war, but I'm told I'm stupid for not thinking that. But I have now grown to appreciate that, you know, I won't make a hard fast 100% of the time, but more often than not, or at least it's observably true that the people who are being called racists are not racist. And what I'm finding is that the people calling the people the ists are the most, I mean, maybe it's so basic that everybody knows this, but the ones using the terms are themselves the ones who are the most intolerant and who invariably have something come up from their past that shows that they are, in fact, the ones who are engaging and who have engaged in the very deplorable behavior that they are now accusing others of, you know, right up to our own prime minister. And it's the word has not only lost all meaning, but now I approach it with a degree of skepticism where, Gary, I've just met you, but I've done a lot of research on you. You seem like a very good person, where I have not seen anything indicating or confirming that you are an ist of any way, nor have I seen anything about Jordan Peterson. Nor Gad Saad, although at least where Gad Saad, I know where people can take offense to things that he says. But I've just noticed that people issuing the accusations are for the most part the ones who are guilty of them. And the people who get these accusations, I haven't seen very many that I would qualify as being intolerant ists.
Projection. There's a lot of projection going on YouTube. And it started out as trolling, right? Back in the day, but now it got lumped into politics and whatever. I don't know what the spark, what started all this, the culture war. I mean, it's happening. I'm in it, whether I like it or not. I had no intention of getting into it. I was just reviewing TV shows and I'm like, this is, you know, once in a while I was like, that's woke BS. You know, that's all I was saying. And then, you know, it flipped, especially with Doctor Who. It really flipped. And I was just reviewing Doctor Who. All of us know it's bigger. It's bigger than just nerddom. It is about culture. It is about our civilization. And it is under attack. And at least, you know, when I was saying that at first, I was like, man, I'm going to sound crazy by saying that. I know people are going to think I'm crazy for saying our civilization is under attack right now, but now I don't. Now, I mean, it's obvious. But it wasn't, you know, when I thought it was obvious, it wasn't to a lot of people. I heard you on a video talking about Clarence Thomas, and you were talking about stating the obvious. This is a time to start stating the obvious over and over again. I was having a conversation with my wife this morning and I said, that's part of YouTube. And that's like when I started figuring, I don't have this thing figured out, but one thing I figured out was I need to state the obvious once in a while because it needs to be said, just because it needs to be said. And I generally believe everybody knows it, but it was what you said in your video. It's something that this is a time for it right now. A revolutionary act is what, telling the truth or something, you know, to that effect. I did my homework.
I saw a good quote the other day which said that courage is contagious, and when one person is courageous, it tends to stiffen up the spines of those around them. It is, and you know, when I was listening to Gad Sad this afternoon, and it is inspirational in the sense that I have always been afraid of offending people, and people accuse me of self-censorship, but I'm afraid of offending people just because I don't like making people feel bad. But what I'm realizing now is that the people, by and large, who come onto my channel and purport to be offended, they're not actually offended, but they're weaponizing their own perceived sense of hurt to actually injure others. And it's playing the victim to victimize others. And so I've realized now that speaking the obvious and just saying things which are, you know, unshocking, common sense things, people will feign hurt, but it is only to sort of undermine and to weaponize their feigned hurt to try to discredit the obvious truths that people are speaking.
Yeah. Yeah. How did Gina Carano get canceled? Like what was her quote unquote offense? It was somebody weaponizing language against her and her just refusing to put pronouns in her bio. The whole pronoun thing is a weapon. That's all it is. It's a bunch of, I don't know who it is. Probably a bunch of really bored, straight white folk pretending to be for trans rights to help get their yah-yahs out by canceling people so they can get a dopamine hit, whatever it is. It's gotten dangerous, and they took, you know, Gina was brave enough. I don't throw that word out a lot because we hear it's somewhat stunning and brave, but no, she was brave enough to risk her career, stand up to the entirety of Hollywood, the whole damn system practically. And she's an inspiration to a lot of people now. And she got screwed. I mean, like that, what gets lost in this is she got screwed. She didn't do anything wrong. And a bunch of people who don't give a shit about, excuse my language, about trans rights, used them as a shield. There might be, you know what? There are people I've gotten in the chat going, hey, I'm trans. I'm not about any of this stuff. I hate people using us like this, you know, and I hear that from the alphabet community as well all the time. But, you know, it kind of goes back to the Zach thing, and it goes back to John Favreau. You know, a lot of people were saying, you know, John Favreau was upset Gina was fired. Well, why didn't he say anything? Well, he's scared. He's scared. And why didn't Bill Burr say anything? Well, he almost did. And Bill Burr damn near got canceled. And somebody's going to have to speak up. And I think we all do this. We all wait for the next guy or gal sometimes. And, you know, we don't know when our opportunity is going to come up, but somebody's going to have to speak up. Gina did. Gina did that. Gina is the one actor who stood up to cancel culture and said, no, just no. Now we need somebody else to do it. And what you just said, hopefully that will sack up the rest of Hollywood and the rest of other people to do the same. And, you know, we continue to do what we do, call it out in our way. And like I said before, we have to behave better than they do. We just do. It sucks. Life is unfair, but we do. We can't act in a way, we can't do things in a way that make us look like everything they say we are.
Or you can't even do the same things they do. Like when I made the video on the Gina Carano incident, and I'm not even on the Bebop Boop pronouns on the on her, you know, comparing it to the Second World War tweet. Yeah. I said, and I referred to it as a dangerous tweet. And I said, and people took that to mean like, you know, it was a dangerous tweet in the tweet in and of itself, you know, was going to hurt people. I was like, no, it's just that, you know, darn well that two people on opposite sides of the spectrum can say the exact same thing. They can even say diametrically opposing things when words stop having meaning and it'll be weaponized for the political purposes of the day. But she literally could not do something else that someone else on the other side of the political spectrum could do and in fact did, just because you will forgive your allies and you will punish your enemies, and even for the same conduct. And so when I said it was a dangerous tweet, it was not dangerous in that anyone with half a brain would actually get offended by it. It was just a dangerous tweet in that it could be misinterpreted and weaponized against her, as it was. Like I always say, in argument, making analogies to Yahtzees in the Second World War, they're typically bad analogies in the first place. Although, you know, I do understand the point she was trying to make. I don't like the analogies, but they just open up for misinterpretation. And when you are engaging with an interlocutor who you know is after doing that, you give them the fodder. But hopefully she comes up stronger. And Dan Bongino talked about, like, you know, parallel economies. It does seem like it's getting to the point where people are just going to have to walk away from the one economy and build their own, but other people don't think that's feasible given respective ownerships of infrastructure, and they only see conflict and not parallel economies, so to speak.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if we can, like, buy our own server farm, maybe, you know, get away.
Or you get a Peter Thiel to do it, and you get a Peter Thiel ally. And
oh my God, yeah, we need a couple of, like, just massive billionaires, based billionaires, to go out there, and, you know, Elon's close, but you know, and he's getting out of California, but yeah, we need that to I'm, you know, when I move, I'm gonna do my own server thing for my website. But it's still going to be connected to somebody else's. I'm not really going to be that free, right? And, you know, I also argue that we need to stay here. Like, we need to be right here in their spaces doing this stuff, because that's what they did. They infiltrated Marvel, DC, Washington, state, like, everything, Hollywood. So let's do the same thing. We'll just do the same thing. And it, you know, it takes a while. It took them years. And we, you know, we were sleeping. We were, you know, didn't think this kind, whatever the reason, it happened. So I think we can play the same game. I think we can play exactly the same game. If we're patient, we're smart, and enough people get into to these workspaces with common sense. By the way, it's just common sense. It's not even another side of the aisle. It's being a human being, who doesn't want to wake up and cancel somebody. And like it, you know, this is where the social commentary comes in. I always bring this up. People ask me, like, what's causing this? And I think that a lot of it is just insecurity. There's a lot of, you know, just lonely people, a lot of people who are, you know, parenting, the schooling's bad, or, you know, our economy has been so good for so many people, not everybody, hashtag not all, that people are bored and they need to invent enemies. You know, I think this is a lot of this is a product of an affluent society, of a society that's made a lot of money and has a lot of bored people. And instead of, you know, using their powers for good, they need to develop bad guys and fight these little battles that, you know, because, you know, drama is interesting to some people and it certainly sells here on YouTube. But now it's not fun and games anymore. It just isn't. It's gotten to such a serious, you know. We all have witnessed last year, and it could get worse. So we need, you know, people like you guys, you know, whether, you know, speaking out all the time. And I always tell people, if they like the YouTube hobby, is like, get into it. Cause you know what? We need replacements. Cause they'll take, you know, some of us will be taken out. Somebody needs to come in and replace it.
What's interesting to me is terms of the, like, is that they seem to really believe, like, going back to, like, doing Justice League and using the Atlanta incident to promote the movie, they seem to really believe that there's this huge audience that they can replace. Some of it is myth about how popular their ideas are, but also that those part of their audience that does exist, sports has been doing the same thing. That, you know, if we're just wokester version of the NBA, we'll find a whole, or the NFL, there'll be a bunch of new people who will watch us now because we're woke. And the thing that I think they seem to misapprehend is there isn't a big, the people who like science fiction, the people who like comic book characters, the people have a certain mindset, and it's not the wokester world. There isn't this big wokester demand. One, that they're underestimating the number of people who care about wokesterism in the first place. They're louder on social media than in living in the real world. But even if they were as big as they were, the kind of group they are, I mean, I have a niece who's in that wokester world. The reality is she's not going to tune into Wonder Woman 1984 just because it's promoted as feminism. She either likes that kind of stuff or she doesn't. Yep. And a lot of people I know in woke world really don't care for popular culture of that kind. They want to shape it and create it to influence everybody else that's in it. But they actually, they're not entertained by that. There's not this big audience for it. And it seems that's one of the big areas where they've missed. Has that been your response or what you've seen as well?
Yeah, it's a huge miss. And I think a lot of that comes from the creatives tend to be more woke and the audience doesn't, obviously. I mean, we're our audience, and I'm sure yours is too, is working class folks. I was talking to Az from Heel versus Babyface yesterday, and he was bringing up, like, some actor wants to identify as a tree. And he brought up, like, if you walked up to, like, an auto mechanic or, you know, and said, yeah, I want you to identify. I want to be identified as a tree. He'd be like, what the are you talking about? You know, it's like, what are you crazy? Yeah, this stuff. Yeah,
well, I mean, my nephew might call him Groot, but that'd be about it.
Yes, exactly. And he, it's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. But yeah, it's the disconnect you were talking about earlier. It's getting wider and wider all the time. And you know, Hollywood acting like royalty, you know, like American royalty, and they're not. I mean, it's not even like, it's nowhere near the Hollywood of before, when there was real movie stars and they put work into their image and everything. Now it's followers and influence. And Hollywood shift. The big thing is Hollywood shifted in how they entertain. They don't want to entertain anymore. They want to influence. And if yeah, you've been on the channel, like, I say that over and over again.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, like American Gods kind of taps into that. The sense of the sort of big tech is really these new modern gods who need constant supporters and followers and retweets and likes to sort of replace the old gods. And as a whole, I've liked American Gods. I thought that was, you know, it's an alternative creative take. And there's little bits of politics in it, but it's really at a low level as far as I can tell. And to the degree it's present, it often fits. I don't mind the lefty politics if it fits the narrative. Fine, that's all right. It's when it's destroying the narrative and wrecking the art. Especially, how did they miss the hero's journey? Like, that was my biggest problem with the Star Wars trilogy. Well, that's second biggest problem. Biggest problem is what they did to Luke Skywalker. But my second biggest was, I was like, she needs, why do I care about her character? She's always perfect. She always wins. So what? Nobody wants to watch that. When they studied fairy tales for six-year-olds, they discover that what they like are the stories with really bad actors in it, because it helps them externalize their own conflicting emotions that they're dealing with. They don't want the easy fairy tale where everything is perfect. They want the one with a version of the hero's arc, what David Mamet talks about. You know, you start out with, well, the hero's journey that you've talked about. How have they missed the core architecture of just how you tell a story?
On purpose. I just saw Fight Club in the chat. Fight Club is a prophetic movie, absolutely prophetic movie, and a cultural movie. I mean, like a movie of a generation, by the way. No, they missed it. They're purposely missing it. And writers are doing things just to keep work, and it might be easier. It's like, oh my God, I don't have to write a hero's journey. She has no conflict, so she'll just be awesome here and awesome here. And that's what I call it the, and people are going to, I don't care if they take this wrong, I call it the hero's journey, because it's part of Captain Marvel and Batwoman. And, you know, there's a lot of really good female characters in comic books that people love. Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, believe it or not, used to be never really popular, but never hated. People liked she was Miss Marvel. She was part of the Avengers. They made her into Captain Marvel, and then they put her in a movie. And then she just all of a sudden became the most powerful thing in the Marvel universe. And she didn't have, and the only thing holding her back was this little tab on her neck that was put there by the evil patriarchy. And when she took it off, she had all the power in the world. And that was their theme. That was it, is like the men were holding her down, even though it was a woman. It was Annette Bening, but Annette Bening's holding us all down. Damn it. No. They've destroyed storytelling with intersectionalism. It just doesn't fit. And when I started noticing, you know, it was actually other people who brought this to me. I was like, something's wrong, you know? And then somebody went, have you ever heard of intersectional feminism? I'm like, no. And I looked into it and I saw how many people were all about it. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, you started hearing all the actors talking, using their talking points or the intersectional feminism and the identity politics talking points, almost like they're coached on it at this point. And I think, you know, actors are empty, vapid adult pretenders, and I think they just parrot things they hear. I don't think they even really think about them that much, to be honest with you. But that's how it infiltrated. It infiltrated through dumb people, and then really smart people who know what they're doing. And but they've the hero's journey is all there. It's there. People still want it, but Hollywood does not want to make it. There's no willingness to make it because they see that as part of Western civilization. And and the patriarchy and whatever were your words they want to use. And what you were talking about before, there's this narrative. I just read it today. Yeah, they're trying to find this whole new set of fans that exists somewhere out there. It's a secret set of fans that aren't the old white ones. And as soon as we do away with, they do away with us, everybody's going to be feel safe to come in and like Star Wars and Star Trek. The only reason they're not feeling safe right now is because of us, because of you in the chat and me. They don't feel safe to root, you know, watch a TV show at home by themselves on their phone or on their computer for some reason, because I don't like it. You know, there is a way to never hear from me or Jeremy at Geeks and Gamers. We don't invade every space, but they do. See, they do. They can talk about stuff all they want, but now it's baked into the scripts. And I am simply going, wow, this is not how these, you know, that's not how Luke Skywalker acts. And then I, you know, with Last Jedi, the craziness was it was 2 years of the media going, that's how Luke Skywalker is. And then there's, you know, the fans going, no. And we were fighting. That was the crux of the argument the whole time, is that's not Luke Skywalker. And then the access media, which was directed by Disney, was going, no, you're wrong. And you're toxic and you're a Russian bot. And, you know, again, we're so used to saying it. But if you look back, there's going to be somebody who looks back on this in 100 years going, that I mean, like, everybody lost their damn mind. Like, you didn't like a movie, so you said there was Russian bots? Russian bots. There's some guy in Russia, you know, making bots.
The inability to accept criticism. Someone had said in the chat before, like we need to be able to have a dialogue. To have a dialogue, people need to be able to accept criticism. And we've gotten to a point where there are artistic dogmas now. It's like, if you dislike the movie, they have to go for the intent and not for the substance. And at the same time, they've got to scrub the dissent from the internet, and they got to scrub any expression of, you know, explaining how bad it was, you know, right up to Rotten Tomatoes. And I think it's an amazing thing. It's that people get to a point where they, Hollywood in particular, where they get so wealthy and they get so famous that they do feel bad and they think that they have to create some form of suffering, or at least try to solve some form of suffering, even if it means creating it. And on the other hand, people are not able to deal with ordinary criticism anymore. I'll say, you know, using the cliche, because of all the safe spaces where people cannot deal with critique without it being destructive as opposed to constructive. And it makes for what we have. And I'm totally appreciating it now. It's bad movies, and the inability to criticize those bad movies without being demonized.
Yeah. And it's so insane that I understand a company needs to put off they have to put off the image that they're being successful all the time, or we'll lose a stockholder or something like that. And you know what, this is America. If somebody, when people show humility, people freaking love that. They love a redemption story, and they love a guy going, I screwed up. Sorry. You know, like with Sonic the Hedgehog, they showed, it's a video game. I don't even know much about that, but that people didn't like the look of the character. And the director, instead of going, F you, he went, oh crap, okay, we'll change it. Wow. And the media was like, this is a dangerous, and I'm not kidding. They were like, they're setting a dangerous precedent, listening to the fans. And the guy, and he, you know what? A movie that would have bombed got a sequel, because the guy just simply did one friendly thing going, you know what? I hear what you're saying. Let's change it. And that's what every business owner does. If somebody comes up to my counter at the comic shop or wherever and says, I don't like this, you know, I don't like how you sold me this, or this thing's bent, you know, I don't go, F you. No, I just go, here's your new one. Thank you very much for bringing it to me. Done. And that's all they need to do. Instead of, you can't sustain a perfect image. Well, for one, Disney obviously doesn't have one. And I'm very happy to point out all their imperfections at every moment because of the things they do. I would be, you know what? Like you said, everybody would be more forgiving if Disney had treated half of their fan base like they were their fan base, like they actually cared about them, instead of going out and attacking them. And their employees run roughshod over them. Their employees were involved in the canceling of Gina Carano. Their employees peripherally were involved with that Medium article. They were supportive of it. We'll just say that. They were sharing it out there quite a bit. Instead of being professional, like, people are always going to criticize you. And another thing people don't like is ingratitude. It's like, you work for you know, nobody wants to hear somebody who works for Star Wars complaining about things. Nobody wants to hear anybody, a millionaire in Hollywood, complaining about things. Nobody cares about your complaints. They really don't. And that's one of the core principles of our audience that we always need to remember. We fight it the way we fight it. It's insanity every day. And it seems like, guys, the last couple of weeks, well, since Gina Carano got fired, it seems like it's been pretty, like, it's leveled up. Like, whatever's been going on has leveled up. And I think it's partially because these companies are in real trouble. They are. The streaming services are not a good enough revenue stream for them. They make money, but like not like blockbuster films do, and not like advertising on television does. And television has been hit pretty hard too. So I think they're starting to crack under the pressure a little bit. And it, you know, like I said, that move yesterday was a big shift. And I think it's only going to get worse for them. And you know, this year eventually most of our movies coming out this year will be out on a streaming service. I don't know why they're waiting, because it doesn't matter. I'm sorry, Middle America, you know, your theaters might be open, but if the California theaters aren't open, then they're not willing to play ball, and they'll just probably end up putting on a streaming service.
You know, I can't reimagine Disney anymore without thinking of the South Park character of Mickey Mouse, you know.
Oh, going God, up, yeah.
Yeah, banging random bats, helping to spread the coup, but they've just done, what's amazing is they've been ahead of the curve. And part, I was awakened to the wokesterism becoming a thing through, you know, their woke principle, you know, but only South Park could introduce that kind of concept. But that they've been incredibly consistent and ahead of the curve on cultural commentary in the sense of what's happening in popular culture. But because in part, what you're referencing in terms of critics reviews and access media, much as what's happened in politics, much as what's happened in academia, much as what's happened in the legal world, we've seen the corruption of the so-called experts, the political infiltration, indoctrination, and thus sort of infection of what their expertise of the credentialed class is supposed to be. And, you know, Gamergate was really about that. It was about the corruption of the comic, of the journalists covering the comic industry. And the, so much like these days, I tell people, you want to see what's an interesting film? Go look at Rotten Tomatoes, find one that the critics hate and that the audience loves. And if you want to know if something is complete crap, like the bastardization they've done to The Equalizer, which I grew up on that show as a kid. So I'm going to be, yep, and I like Queen Latifah. I'm a fan of Queen Latifah. She's not The Equalizer. Mm-mm. It was not going to work. And then they try. I was like, I will watch this if they've recreated The Equalizer to be like a certain kind of nerd that knows certain kind of culture. I could see her pulling that off. No, they pretend she's the old Equalizer, that she's a badass in action movement. I'm like, come on. Nobody's going to buy this. You might as well put me in an NBA outfit and pretend I'm LeBron James. This is not viable. I might wish it was true. Doesn't make it so. To what degree is the corruption? But the critics love Equalizer because it fits the right politics, and the audience hates it. So it's these consistent, and then Rotten Tomatoes using their tech to try to manipulate the algorithm, to try to suppress the bad reviews. It's amazing how all of these sort of gatekeepers have been so corrupted that they can no longer give us, we can't rely upon them to give us honest reviews. In fact, if anything, they're reliable for telling us what to watch when they tell us not to watch it, and what not to watch when they tell us to watch it. To what extent has the, like, I think a lot of what the demand for what you do is present. Like, one of the big reasons I watch it is I want to get honest, insightful criticism from a storytelling perspective of whether I'm going to like something or not like something. And praise God, I didn't invest any of my time in last season's Doctor Who, which was just left me with bitter rage, like the last season of Game of Thrones did.
Game of Thrones. Well, I'm still bitter.
I'll be bitter. It's like my dad was always bitter about them trading Carlton Fisk for the Boston Red Sox. 20 years later, he was complaining about it. I'll be bitter. You know, maybe I'll be bitter ever since they fired Phil Fulmer. I mean, they'll put me in my grave, and I'll be murmuring things about it from the great coach of the University of Tennessee who was wrongfully terminated. But the other thing, that was such a brilliant series, an integration of so many genres. And I had problems with certain aspects. I thought there were certain things I didn't think needed to be portrayed in the way they were. But that's, you know, that was just a moral point. That was not an artistic aesthetic criticism. But they just destroyed it. I mean, they just wrecked it with that atrocious last season. And then Hollywood pretended it was great art because it's their buddy, their pals and their bankers' kids. Going back to what you're saying is who these people are. These are not people from disadvantaged backgrounds. They have to pretend to be victims because they haven't been real victims of life. They don't come from poor and working class backgrounds. They haven't grown up homeless on the streets like a buddy of mine at Yale did, who could say his favorite thing to do is to sit down and tell people stories at the lunch table just to watch their shock about what it's like to be 6 years old and how emergency rooms are substitute places for you to stay because you don't go to the shelter because the shelter is where you get abused. These people don't have any sense of those stories. They want to pretend they do, so they create victimhood out of complete cloth. But to what extent has the complete, did it surprise you at all how, when you entered this space, how completely unreliable and corrupt all the gatekeepers, the critics, the press were in terms of covering entertainment?
Did it surprise me?
Were they as corrupt when you initially started? That's the question I'm wondering. Is I do wonder if there's been exponential corruption in the last 10 years, and I've seen it from reviews right up until the Joker, Gary.
Oh yeah, the Joker was that outed more of them too. Yeah, I you know what? Maybe I'm bitter and cynical. I saw it coming in comic books beforehand. So when I saw it behind the media, I'm like, oh yeah. So I wasn't. It surprised me now, like how bad this thing has gotten. You know, I was warning a couple of years ago. I'm like, this is going to things are going to be bad. I didn't think they would be this bad, to be honest with you. But it's been enlightening. It's been enlightening seeing. I mean, even things I can't talk about. It's like seeing how absolutely corrupt the whole access media is. I mean, they're I can't believe people go to them anymore for anything other than a chuckle.
Or feel like just the reverse is go see if it got a good, critics rating, you can bet you can put money that it's probably going to be less good. And if it got a good crowd rating, typically you could, you know, depending on the volume, but I go to it for reverse rating basically.
Yeah. I go there for material and, for research. And it's just to confirm what I thought of how corrupt they usually are because they're pretty open about it nowadays. No, it's the reason our, YouTube has grown. It's absolutely the reason YouTube has grown, especially in the nerd sphere, is nobody had anywhere to go. They weren't getting, I wasn't getting the truth. And now, I mean, it's instant when, I don't care if a reviewer said I would much rather watch a guy with 100 subscribers talk about a movie. I know I'm getting the truth from this guy, or at least, it depends, but I know I'm getting a real reaction out of this guy or gal. I would much rather, it's more entertaining too. I don't have time for established media anymore. I think they're done. I think they're like electronic media is just over and we're just right now it's on hospice and we're waiting for it to die out. The nerd sites are dying out that you could barely get through. You know, you got an article that's about like a square inch surrounded by ads. And there's a reason for that. They can't compete against us. For one, the a lot of us are being honest and number two, we love this stuff as much as they say we hate it. No, we love this stuff. I read the comics. I talk about, I read the books I talk about, I watch the movies I talk about, I watch the TV shows I talk about. I don't talk about things I don't watch, read, or listen to. And I think that's important. Some people don't, and that's fine, but I try to keep it focused on that because that way you can show people like what changed. You asked me earlier about the story structure, right? When I really started noticing woke stuff, like I knew in my mind that like they are changing stuff for politics now. This isn't just a thought. This isn't just a theory. This is a scientific fact that I could probably make a video and prove is, you know, with The Witcher. You know, that's just an example I'm pulling out of my head. There's a short story that they adapted for one episode and they changed so many things just to emphasize female empowerment, not even the woman who was already in the story. She was always a part of the story. So it wasn't just to show, you know, it wasn't like there's too many dudes in this, because that's what their excuse is. There's too many dudes in this. We're trying to mix it up, trying to get a female audience. So we're going to bring in a female. Well, the story was about this female, but they utterly, I don't even need to tell you details, but they utterly changed her story to make her the emphasis over the main character. Why would you do that? storytelling wise, why would you do that? That you just undercut your main character. The show's called The Witcher. It's not called what's her name? You know, Michael, they butchered The Witcher, and I promise I will make a video on that one episode, and I will just point out all the, so people, you know, if you read the book, you'd notice the changes, but I will point out the changes, and these changes were made for political reasons. That's it. It's not to make money. It wasn't to make the story better. It was because we want to influence people and not entertain them. It's crazy.
It is. I mean, I've never fully appreciated until the last 2 days, but especially now, the parallel, the analogies, and the similarity between the infiltration of politics and law, the infiltration of politics and justice, and the infiltration of politics and the media. I mean, I'm unabashed. I haven't seen a lot of, I don't watch movies anymore because I find them unpleasant. I'd never seen one episode of Game of Thrones. I watched Breaking Bad. I watched Dexter. What was some of the other series? But I find it painful. And I find it painful, especially going back to watch some of the classics when humor could be funny and when violence could be violent. And I can't wait for my kids to be old enough to watch Fight Club. Maybe some of the Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. But now it's just like, I find it tedious. I find it painful. And I find it irritating to the point of boredom. Don't even watch the Oscars anymore. It used to be the biggest family event in our house. We used to print up the sheets, put money on it, vote. I don't watch it. And not only do I not watch it, I actively avoid it because I hate it. So I guess that's my rant.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, we used to treat the Oscars like the Super Bowl. I remember I was so happy when Lord of the Rings won. It was felt like such a victory. Nerds got an Academy Award. I was so freaking happy. Now I don't care. They could give my thing an award, and I would actually look at it as like a joke, you know,
like a Nobel Peace Prize.
Nobel Peace Prize. Exactly. And these things are dying out. These are all 21st century models. Right. And that's what Hollywood is suffering. Hollywood peaked a long time ago, actually, probably like 10 years ago. You know, I mean, the only thing that's kept them alive is Marvel Cinematic, you know, the MCU. Without the MCU, how many movies can you think of that were massive hits? I mean, over the last 10 years, it's a handful. Sure, they're there, but they're all Disney movies. But outside of that, we're not getting, you know, the art aspect of it is gone. Right. And I like a good superhero movie. I do. It's a roller coaster ride, but I miss the Pulp Fictions of the world, and they're out there, but they're these indie things that nobody's going to see now.
They're foreign films now. They're like, you know, the movies coming out of South Korea, Japan. I mean, it's just not Hollywood, and it's not coming out of the marketplace that has no new ideas and that is dogged down by the fear of being offensive. I never liked Tropic Thunder, period. I never liked it. I didn't find it funny at the time. I found it too violent for the humor, but you'll never get that anymore because you can't have, you'll never get there's something about Mary ever again, because at least out of Hollywood, because people are just too afraid to actually, you know, do what comedy is, which is push the limits and push the limits.
No, you're not going to get a 40-year-old virgin anymore or the first Ron Burgundy. And that guy, that was such a good run of comedy.
40-year-old virgin is I get flack for it. It's one of the funniest movies ever made. Or Get Into the Greek.
Totally agree. I love it. Absolutely now, love it.
The other thing you've had to deal with is everything related to the lockdown politics. Viva's, you know, hiding out in a cabin in Canada thanks to the crazy Quebec lockdown politics. You had to leave San Francisco because of the insanity of what's taking place. Two questions. One is, could you give people just a sense of what happened to your wife's business and all of it? Also, because it's a microcosm of, I think, what's happened to a lot of small business entrepreneurial folks across the country and around the world these days. And then secondly, where's going to be the ultimate destination? Is it going to be still in Cali or escape from Cali?
All right. I'll answer it in order. So my wife had a hair salon. My wife was the successful one. She's the star of the family. She has been a hairdresser for decades. She's got like top tier A-list client, like, you know, CEOs of big tech companies, I don't want to drop any names, but well, just trust me, it's a pretty serious client list. And she worked for the top salon, then she opened up her own, and again did it for 15 years, absolutely successful till the day it closed. Was always did better, than the previous year. It was growing like crazy. She was, heading towards retirement in a few years. But yeah, things were great. And the year before, the coup hit, I call it the coup, San Francisco's economy was blowing up. Like California's economy was great. It was the best I've ever seen it. Like everybody was making money. Everybody was making money. And they shut it down on a year and a few days ago to flatten the curve for 2 weeks. And 6 months later, my wife's business was gone. She had to shut it down. And the reason she shut it down, is she knew that it would be, we're going to open, we're going to close, we're going to limit the capacity. And that's what they were doing in California, by the way. They said at one point they could reopen. This was the first reopening. Then they called it off at the last minute after everybody had spent thousands of dollars getting their place compliant. Restaurants, that's what killed the restaurants. And she just said, I'm near the end. I don't want to burn through our life savings to save a business. The landlord wanted to re-up the lease and he wasn't being that understanding, but then he became understanding. But by then it was too late. We saw the writing on the wall that we'd have to be closed for a year. We'd have to take care of 9 employees for a year, probably 2 now. And we figured it would be 2 years, and that's what it's going to be. I still think it's going to be, California won't be back to normal for another year, maybe year and a half. And we didn't want to burn through our life savings. We have kids, we're not young. She had to shut it down, and it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. If she thought she could have made it, she would have, but she's like, there's just no way. And we already saw businesses burning through their life savings. And she had to shut it down. And then the riots started, and we saw California during the riots. There was a little one in San Francisco, and we saw the sentiment of defunding the police. And the minute the police chief at San Francisco said, yeah, we'll think about defunding the police. I mean, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but that's what he said. You could feel the tone of the entire city change, and all confidence was lost in the cops, and people felt free to do a lot of stuff, and crime ticked. You could see it. Like I said, you could see it. It was visible. More cars were getting broken into, fireworks, like all night, gunshots, like all that stuff, which wasn't there 2 weeks before, was all over the city. So the city didn't feel safe anymore. Like, I was the first time I've ever walked around in America and been in a nice, and just like, this is not cool. I do not want to be in a city anymore, like ever again. And saw freeways were getting shut off. I'm used to that. That stuff happens in San Francisco all the time. They're always blocking a freeway. They're always protesting. Trust me, this was different. This was much different. So like, we're out. And there was, I was getting sick of San Francisco anyway, let's be honest, and the schools, but the loss of my wife's business was it. I'm like, I for one, I don't want to stay in a city and I don't want to support these politics anymore. I just can't. I don't want to support a city that shut my wife down when Target was open and everyone else. And the worst part about it was seeing her go through it. See, people are like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about your business closing, but you see the effects afterwards and how that affects one person and how long it takes for them to get, you're mourning a loss. It's a death in your family when you lose your business. I had to sell my business. I felt terrible. So watching her go through that, times that by a million in this country right now, because that's about how many people had to shut down their businesses. That's why they were fighting. And then these people were getting shamed. My wife was getting shamed for wanting to stay open and feed our kids. And that's the stigma from the media and from Hollywood, who was shaming people. So that's what led me to want to, I never thought I'd leave California. Never. I love it here. Love it here. It's great. The weather's awesome. But I don't want to live in, and I say this as a centrist, I don't want to live in a one-party state. where this party is in control, can do whatever they want, and they don't feel the need to listen to anybody anymore. They're just going to do what they want to do. And they could have kept businesses open last summer. If you look at the numbers, San Francisco always had some of the lowest numbers, like always. It was consistently some of the lowest. They could have opened up some businesses and they could have survived. The politicians were cowards and they didn't know. They're clueless. The mayor at San Francisco, she's a lifelong academic. She went to school and then she went to work for the city. She has no idea how to run a business. Not the first clue about it. And 60% of the businesses are gone. Are gone.
People don't know what that means. Oh, go ahead, Robert.
The other component with that is, it's amazing going back to sort of cultural iconic, sort of iconic films and the rest, is I didn't think we would ever re-see the late 1960s, early 1970s. Like, people forget the Dirty Harry films were based out of San Francisco, you know, is the setting for them. The, you know, Escape from New York made a particular cultural context in the late 70s, early 80s, crazy, chaotic, anarchistic crime. And I loved San Francisco. I did never saw that side of San Francisco. When I went out there in the late 90s, the beginning of, or sort of the, at that point, a peak of a dot-com boom, but the beginning of the big tech revolution taking over the San Francisco economy, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, gorgeous, you know, a little bit of crazy homelessness in the height. You know, I had this Irish guy with a big beard and a big beer came up to me and asked me for some money. I said, no, I don't really have any. And then he bashed the beer and said he didn't want to drink anything more anyway. So, you know, there was a couple of experiences like that. You know, like somebody barking at you on Kafka Avenue in Prague, that seemed appropriate for the place and location for the Heights history of, you know, hippiedom. But nothing like what's happening now. Like what you're describing, I haven't been back since people have been describing what you've been describing. And that, you know, the liberal DAs are basically not prosecuting small level crimes. So small stores, you know, you can just go in and rob. I mean, comic store. I mean, place. I don't know how any place like that could survive in current San Francisco between what's happening in the woke world and the comic industry and what's happening on the street where you can go in and rob what you want under a certain value, you know, needles littered on the street when they're designing apps to let you know where human poop is. So you can avoid it. This is not the San Francisco of dreams. You know, this is not the San Francisco of Tony Bennett. How quick, it seems like it happened rapidly, but maybe that's just my external take. What was your take living there?
It happened, I'd say over the course of a few years. It's the big tech, the chain. Oh God, the city looks completely different from when I moved there. I moved there in 2003, 18 years later. It's a completely different skyline. There's giant skyscrapers, which were never there before. And that's in the last few years. And that's from this tech boom. And that's what led to the changes. The more power the big tech people had, the less the city started being itself. It stopped being that artistic kind of fun hippie town and turned into whatever it is now. And which are, I mean, God, a technocracy. I have no idea.
It looks like a bad futuristic film.
It is. It almost looks cyberpunk. It almost looks cyberpunk at this point. It's that bad. And yeah, the crime is as I don't know if it is. It was for a while as bad as it was in the early 80s, late 70s, late 60s. You know, I remember how I'm old enough to remember how bad the crime was in New York back then. It was really bad. And it's really bad in San Francisco. The car break-ins, they don't, you can file a report online. And Memeology did a video. I'm sure Memeology is a great channel. He did a video of this, the three people who walked into a Walgreens and they just started clearing it out with masks on during the day. And there's nothing anybody can do. And that's true. If you can walk into a grocery store, if you steal under $1,000 worth of stuff, nothing's going to happen to you. Nothing's going to happen to you. And I mean, who would want to do business there? So all of that, you know, is the COVID compounded with the violence and the riots and California politics and Gavin Newsom, who's the worst governor in living memory, even worse than Gray Davis. It's not worth the price of living here. I mean, it's very expensive here, like ridiculously expensive, and it's just not worth it anymore. And I don't want my kids. It's not safe for my kid. who is a teenager. He's missing his most formative years right now. We were just talking, you know, your kid got to go to school. Like, my kid hasn't been to school in a year and a half.
The other thing is, you have to be careful the way you criticize these measures, because you don't want people thinking you're playing scientist, but it's, the damage that we will see to a generation, we'll only see in a generation, but this is not how children can be brought up.
No.
And then, you know, the only question is, will the cure have been worse than the illness? And I know where I would put my money if I had to make a bet. And the other thing is, you know, people, Robert and I are lawyers. I've done bankruptcy, and I've seen the devastation that goes through losing a business. I mean, it's people think, especially people who have never owned a business. And I'm not saying this in a judgmental way. On the one hand, people who have never built one would never be able to appreciate it. And then on the other hand, the people who are already passed that, you know, one bankruptcy won't make a difference for them, have forgotten what it's like losing a business. It's devastating. It's devastating, and it causes all sorts of other problems. So, Gary, I mean, I don't know. Where do you plan on heading?
We've gone through, I watched my wife go through that, and she's come out the other side because she's tough. She's tough. She's kind of on to the next thing. We're about to take off in the next couple of days. I'm taking my first vacation since I started the YouTube thing, and we're gonna go check out Nevada. Unlikely, but I'm checking it out. Arizona, Texas. But Texas is probably going to be the destination. I think I've got my heart set on it. Just not Austin, nothing anywhere. I want to be as un-California as possible. I'll miss the weather, but I'm not going to miss much else.
Well, Texas has good weather. I'm not going anywhere necessarily, but Arizona, to me, the Saguaro Desert was the most beautiful place I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I think people are happy about Texas, Gary.
Oh yeah, it's probably gonna be Texas. I'm gonna be in Texas in a few days.
All right.
So it's on. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm not Joe Rogan. I can't just go, I'm going to Texas and be there in a month with my studio built. I will be taking this thing down by myself and putting it back up somewhere else. but I kind of like doing it. I can't wait to get out of here. I really can't. It just, as each day goes by, it's just one frustration after another, one more freedom encroached on. And, you know, and it gets, you know, my friend Ryan Kinnell brought this up. You know, people just say, it's just property. Yeah. It's just this, it's just that, it's just freedom. Yeah. It's just your life.
Yeah, it's just your ability to go outside after 8 o'clock. It's just your ability to actually, you know, do that which was promised to every citizen of a free country, is to live freely and not under the whimsical, arbitrary measures that are declared and renewed from a government that by and large doesn't really know what it's doing. But yeah, it's just that. And if you complain, you're an ingrate. That's the problem. You're an ingrate rebel who doesn't want to contribute to the greater good.
The only criminal laws we need is that the next people who degrade the legacy of Luke Skywalker serve 50 years at Gitmo. That would be inappropriate for the kind of things they want to make crimes in the modern world. But sort of as an exit question, let you go, Gary. From what you've seen in the last several years covering everything that's taking place, what are some of the things that you've seen as signs of optimism, as hope that the fandom has for the culture, for Hollywood representing and reflecting what they want going forward, more so than where they've been? Even though there's been a lot of things to be despairing about, there have been signs along the way of cracks in the foundation and maybe some opportunity for return. What are some of those things in particular, like any particular shows or other sort of good cinematic things that are out there now?
Well, one show that's out there now that is, and I cannot believe I'm saying this, it's on the CW. It's taking a little break because of COVID, so don't get confused, but I think it's after next week. But Superman and Lois is a very good show. I like it a lot, and it's just simple. It's about if you watch it, you go, what? But you got to consider everything we've seen. It's like an oasis in this desert of woke, and it's just about a family and Superman. Yeah, Superman and Lois is a good show. The Orville, if it ever comes back, I love the Orville. It's just it's a Star Trek parody that got more serious, and it's done by Seth MacFarlane. I like that. And but there, I mean, this has been the worst I've like. Even I'm like you, writing. It's all about writing. I don't care what politics are in. If it makes sense and it's a good story, you told me a good story, I'm fine. That's all I'm good with. But my God, has the writing been so bad? You know, yeah, I like the Snyder Cut came out, but that's a 6-year-old movie, basically. I like that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was good. You know, I don't. But as far as hope is with the fans. I think it's with the fans. What's coming out of this? What will come out of this, and it's going to take a long time to do this, is what Gene is doing with the Daily Wire, and they are producing their own stuff. We've got comic books being made. It's a lot easier to make a comic book on your own. So you have a bunch of people have branched out and started doing that. And that is the future of the comic book industry. As far as movie and TVs, it's going to be a little tougher because those cost a lot more money to make. But you see little signs, like I said, Sonic, when the Sonic director came out and listened to the fans, they got a successful movie and a sequel. And I think that would have been copied, and but that happened right before everything was shut down for COVID. So once we get back to, I'm not going to say normal, because I don't think that'll ever happen again based on how much control we all relinquished to our overlords until we take it back. I think when things open up again in Hollywood, they start getting box office results, you're going to see them freak out and change. Then they're going to have to provide fan service if they want fans. That's just a fact. This woke crap doesn't sell. It didn't sell yesterday. It's not going to sell today. It's not going to sell tomorrow. And after you see, you know, this year's offering from like Marvel, they'll change their ways. I it's going to take a couple more years, but I think it's with the fans. The hope is always with the fans.
All right. And with that said, everybody, I do apologize for my lighting. If anyone was in there in the beginning, you know why. I'm in the dark in a room, but I'm not in prison. And I, you know, whatever. The lighting is good enough, but it's just more important we have the discussion. Gary, thank you very much. This was amazing. Robert, thank you for making this happen, by the way, because you made this happen. But Gary, let's do this again periodically. Well, I'll have to bone up on some of my Captain Marvel stuff. I mean, I'll bone up on something. I'll go pick one so we can have a more detailed discussion about it the next time. But let's do this again.
Yeah. Hey, you can never go wrong with old Star Trek. Go on with the original series, Captain Kirk, some of the best stuff ever. And it's, you know, it's just 3 seasons. All you got to watch is the first couple for it to start.
Get my dad used to watch the replays of that over and over and over.
Oh, again. God. Over and over again.
That's what these monsters did. You know, they urinated on the joy of kids. Yes. And that's why they deserve to be shamed into infamy. And hopefully over time, that's where they will end up.
And mocked. Like we try to mock and shame, have a good laugh at their expense. And that tends to work. It really pisses them off anyway. And that's too bad.
Meme them into the hell that they belong into.
Like Gad said, a big brain and a sharp tongue, and you can get some results.
Yes, exactly.
All right, everybody in the chat, thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of this. Gary, Robert, stick around so we'll say our proper goodbyes. Everyone, enjoy the rest of the week and stay tuned. We'll do this.